Originality.
You.
Welcome to Autographs. My name is Nick Singh, and just know originality is on the horizon. Let's go.
What's cooking, good lookins? This is Nick Singh. We are back with another episode this week. I'm pulling this one deep out of the archives. You know, many of you may not know this, but I've actually been running a podcast for like 5 years. It's just, I was very hot and cold with it. I would start it, I would stop it, I called it different things. It was all over the place for a little bit. So I'm flushing out the archives with you folks, but I'm almost through all of them, which is not something I'd ever thought. Well, actually, I knew one day I'd get to it, but I never thought that I'd feel so bittersweet about it. It's definitely a phase coming to a close. I just have a few more here, and this is one of them. And I say this on almost every intro, and I've noticed that kind of pattern, but it is one of my favorite episodes. And this one is inherently very sentimental and special for me, and I want to explain why. Not only was it taken about 4 years ago, I remember where I was when I was doing it. I was in second or third year university, and I was pacing back and forth in this little room between, it wasn't even a room, it was like where the automatic doors, this is the worst fucking place to record a podcast. I don't know what I was thinking. I just like to walk and talk, and I knew I couldn't go to the library because it was too loud, and sorry, I would be too loud. So I, for some reason, ended up going to the gym. I don't know why this happened, and it, I was between the doors. It was like the sliding doors, you would go to outside. Then there was like this little area. There's another set of sliding doors to go into the front desk. And I just stood in that area while people walked in and out. Mind you, it wasn't that busy of an entrance or exit, but still it's like random, right? So what I'm trying to say is that the audio quality on this call is so bad, and it's a total nod to who I was back then. I was just this kid who just wanted to get on the phone with people that he looked up to, and didn't really quite care for the little things like audio, because at the time, and you know, to this day, I still, a big part of the show is for my own learning. And I needed to, and still need to, walk through these experiences and these conversations in a way that feels good for me so that I can get the most out of them. Selfishly, I'm not trying to hide that from anybody. But I've learned over the years the necessity to have strong audio so that hopefully other people could stand to benefit from it too. But my hope is that the accents, my incredible wizards of a team and partners, can help with the audio in some semblance to make this audible for you. Anyways, the gentleman that I have on the show today, his name is Gannon Baker. Now, Gannon was an instrumental force in my life. He was a motivator before motivation happened for me. I was really young, and Gannon used to run these basketball training camps of all things, and I was this young, hungry kid, always ambitious, incredibly motivated, certain I was going to make the NBA. Didn't quite turn out that way, but it's okay. I've parted ways with the dream. And Gannon used to run these incredibly intense basketball camps, and he would tour the world, and I'm talking about China, USA, and this was like in the early 2000s, man. This was well before anybody else was doing this sort of thing. And for some reason, he'd come to my hometown every single year, a few times a year, and I would always go. So would all my friends who played basketball, because this guy fucking brought it. No two ways about it. And Gannon wasn't just this coach who brought incredible basketball training. He was an NBA coach, man. He used to go and train with NBA players like Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, Chris Paul, LeBron James. He used to be the head of a lot of training camps that Nike basketball would put on for the best high school basketball players in the United States. So Gannon was no joke, man. He used to be a big part of Kobe's efforts and helping upholster basketball in China with Kobe's training camps. And he was really quite known in the basketball community. In fact, I think he still is, but he's obviously gotten older and stuff. So I'm not sure exactly where his brand is at today. But Gannon, the really special part about him wasn't the fact that he was such an incredible basketball trainer. It was what he really brought to the game of basketball was far outside of basketball. He was really certain that he was here to not just teach basketball, but teach principles of life, teach philosophies. He was a man of God, and he was a man of love. I'm sure he still is. And this call was very much so a nod and a testament to all of that. It's less about basketball, and it's more about the philosophies that he's used to guide his life. And I've never actually shared this, but way back in the day, this was in the early stages of Gannon's brand, He used to have this thing on his website where you can pay $150 to book a personal phone call with him to get coached over the phone. And I remember wanting that so bad. And I just asked my mom for it for Christmas. She got it for me. And, you know, I was in this basement, like the basement I'm currently in. And I was taking a call with Gannon. And he coached me. And I remember getting out of that call so freaking motivated. And, man, this guy's just so pleasant. And he has an energy that reminds me of all the great people that I've been privileged enough to have on this show and meet. He's a very special human in my life and many lives, and I hope that you folks get a lot out of this. So enjoy the show. Please mind the audio. I hope you can get through it. And let me know what you think. This is Nick Sang. Thanks for listening. Peace.
By yourself, you have did you have yourself a great weekend?
Yeah, good weekend, man. I did some training and spent some time with the kids, man. Did some Halloween stuff.
Solid, man.
I'm on the road.
I love that. I love that, man. You sound the exact same from when I used to come to your camps when I was a kid, man. Hearing that voice is real nostalgic for me, I gotta say. And you know, I just want to start this call off by acknowledging you for a moment. If you don't mind, and just kind of let anybody listening to this, when I sit down and record it and edit it up, kind of know who you are, from at least my perspective, because I think if they check out your brand, they're going to see a guy who trained some of the best athletes in the world, top tier from NCAA, WNBA, NBA, and all the way down to little kids, because you pour back into them. But I think when I was little, I didn't recognize it then, but you're just such a giver. And I'm not sure if a lot of people take the time to acknowledge you about that, because I don't know if you believe this, but I really think that that aspect of your personality has laid the foundations for where you are today. I don't feel like you have a selfish bone in your body. And I've always asked myself when I was little, how come he is able to get motivated and moving more so than my coaches at my high school and all this stuff? And I think it's just because your intentions were some of the purest that I've ever come by. And that led to benefits for my life. Well beyond basketball, which is exactly why I want to get on the call with you, because I figured, you know what, I think that more people really need to hear your message. And I definitely believe in you, and I've been touched by your movement in my lifetime, and I'm really grateful. So I want to let you know that I appreciate you, and thank you for the time.
Hey, Nick, man, it's nice of you to say, man. Yeah, I appreciate it. And, you know, givers don't do things so that they can, I mean, it definitely helps. You know, words of affirmation is my love language, but I, you know, you do it because you just have so much passion for the game and so much passion for young kids that, you know, I was successful, but it wasn't easy for me as a player, and now I'm real successful as a coach, and it's still not easy, but if somebody can have, you know, have success in their career or their, you know, their profession like I have, that's why I do it. I mean, the world needs more love. I mean, that's cliche. They need more love, man. People need more joy. There's so many people going around, and in all professions, they're just so daggone bitter. And you get love and you get confidence from doing something that maybe people and even sometimes yourself thinks you can't do. And once you do it, boy, that's exciting. And then, you know, my job is to play basketball with kids. I mean, that's a hell of a job. So I
do. A dream come true, man. That's a dream come true.
Yeah. What camp did you go to? Salt Fleet, Oakville.
I went to
Sault Ste. Marie.
I went to a handful of them. I've been to, I think, like three at Salt Fleet. Definitely more in Oakville. I think I went like every single time that you came for like at least 3-4 years of my life.
Okay, yeah, that's awesome, because we still do, we did Oakville for a long time, and then I started going to China, but I kept Salt Fleet, and I might do Guelph next year before I do Salt Fleet. So
I love Canada. You want to know something crazy? I'm literally I'm in Guelph right now. I'm at the basketball courts in Guelph. I go to school here. I'm finishing up my degree, and I'm legitimately standing overlooking the basketball courts. I figured that this would be the most appropriate place to take your phone call based on who you are. But anyways, man, I figured, you know what, we might as well fly right into it. And one thing I did want to start with is a lot of the people that I do interview are entrepreneurs, they're founders, they're game changers, they're thought leaders and speakers. And while you retain all of those, I think that primarily people see you in a public eye as a coach, in a basketball sense. And I've had the unique privilege of kind of encountering your brand outside of that, and being inspired beyond just basketball. And I think anybody who encounters you feels that too. But just for the sake of context, if you could just set up a little bit of your story here for like the next 2 to 3 minutes as to where things started for you and kind of how you got to where you were, I think that would lay the foundation for an even deeper conversation in the future.
Okay, you can start right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, go for it.
Basically, I always loved basketball. You know, I played in high school, college, professionally. And before I played professionally, I got into college coaching. I got a GA job at Hampton University, so I was able to get a master's and then learn how to be a college coach. And during the summers of my my college career, to earn a little money, I worked five-star basketball camp, which, you know, a lot of people still remember. And at five-star, you go from 8 in the morning until 8 at night, and they give you a station. And so I was given ball handling and passing and dribbling. And then, you know, throughout the years, I would get decision-making and shooting. And then I would be asked to, you know, do a camp lecture. So I cut my teeth as a coach at 18 years old. I'm 45 now, so I had everybody's – I know it's about that 10,000 hour rule. If you get 10,000 hours in something, that then you can master it. So at 18, I started learning how to teach and coach, and I got an undergrad in physical education and a master's in kinesiology. So, you know, you learn how to teach and how the body works. And with 6 years of college coaching, you know, I got a lot more experience. And then I played and got hurt. At the age of 30, I got cut by the Denver Nuggets, and so I'm like, well, through injuries, and then, you know, at 30, I have to do something for the rest of my life. So I'm a Christian. I read The Purpose-Driven Life, and I thought God's purpose for me was to be a basketball teacher, but do it as an independent business or an independent coach, which was unheard of back in 2000. And, you know, here we are 17, 18 years later. I've been to 45 countries and inspired a lot of people to run their own training business. So it's hard because, you know, I'm not affiliated with NBA or NCAA or WNBA or FIBA, but I've gained, experience, and I've gained credibility and respect from those organizations where they allow me to train their teams and players. So it's been a really neat ride, and I guess God was right, and I listened.
Man, that is just beautifully put. And, you know, I must say, it's kind of funny because as you were talking, you were saying in 2000, really there didn't exist a kind of industry that you've almost – like in some way pioneered, and now everywhere you go, there's basketball coaches popping up left, right, and center. But you've still taken kind of like a really top, masterful spot, and I think rightfully so, just based on who you are and how far you've come. And you know, I remember being at your camps when I was young, and I think that what was really intriguing was that you were able to get your foot in the door with legitimately the best players on earth. Like, I'm talking about Kobe Bryant, Chris Paul, LeBron James, you name it. And they saw eye to eye with you. You saw eye to eye with them. And I mean, I don't know, like, are you actually training those players, or did you participate as like coaching in their camps, or what did that look like?
Well, it's kind of neat. You know, Nike built these skill academies, and they hired me and Kevin Eastman to direct them. And so I got these players as high school kids, college kids, and then pros. And so I was able to train them, you know, at every level. And I was able to train them at their camps during lunch. And then, you know, some of them hired me the rest of the summer, if my schedule permitted, where I would work them out, you know, outside of camp. So I have to give credit to Nike. You know, they put me in front of these players, and then my passion and my intensity kind of and competency, you know, they found something valuable with me, so, you know, we got a good workout out of it.
It's freaking awesome, man. I love that. I've always wondered. I always wonder how that whole situation worked. But like I said, deservingly so. So you know what? Now that people kind of have an idea as to who you are, Gannon, like one thing I'd really love to do is just dive into a conversation about your philosophy and about your beliefs, you know, necessarily outside of basketball. because I think that basketball is your medium, and it's beautiful that you've been able to find such a powerful medium that you've, like, literally mastered. But what I'm interested in is what's behind that medium, because, I mean, I played basketball growing up, and there's a lot of coaches who love the game, but then there's those handful of coaches, just like you have teachers in high schools, colleges, wherever you go, who don't just love teaching, but they really love, and I started off the conversation saying this, seeing people win. They love to give. You know, they have a lot of heart in it. And I call it will, I call it heart, I call it soul. I don't know what you call it, but I think you know what I'm talking about. And it's not something you could teach.
Yeah.
It's not something you could teach, but it's like when you rub up against somebody who has that, it's very hard to deny that aspect in yourself, which is why I think so many kids go through camps like I did. And I just want you to talk on that for a moment, because I think that a lot of people on this call or who are going to be listening to this are going to be doing their own respective things in life where they're trying to win. But one theme that I'm noticing is I'm 22 years old is that everybody's going out there and they're achieving, but very few are fulfilled inside. You know what I mean? Very few really feel fulfilled. And I think that you've mastered not only the art of achieving, Gannon, I think that you've also figured out uniquely how to fulfill yourself. And I think that that's where all of that juice comes from. I don't think it comes from the achievement. I think it comes from the deep fulfillment. You know, like working with Kobe Bryant's cool, but I think it's the look in the kid's eye at the end of the day that really gets you going. I might be wrong, but you could correct me. And what I'd love for you to touch on is just telling and sharing with us how you've been able to master that art of fulfillment in your life, where that comes from, and why you think a lot of people aren't fulfilled, and maybe what you can say might help.
No, I think that's a good point, a good question. I think today's, you know, in the present, I think a lot of people are stuck. You know, I think when kids leave their house, they turn 18, 19, and they have to go into the quote-unquote real world, go to college, figure out what they want to major in. And when they leave college, what am I going to do? You know, a lot of people are stuck, and I see that. I feel that. I'm not stuck. So I'm like, you know, I don't want people to get stuck, because at times I've been stuck, and, you know, it's not a good feeling. It's very frustrating. It affects affects relationships in your life. So, to me, I think, you know, if people have a profession, they got to do their job. So for me, it's, all right, guys hire me to work on his shooting. I'm going to make him a great shooter. I'm going to get him better. Guys wants me to teach him, you know, how to get a college scholarship. I'm going to do that. You got to be competent and you got to do your job. But outside of that, that's just the surface. A deeper impact that I always think about daily and always prepare for, you know, when people on the airplane listening to music or watching a movie, I'm studying, I'm reading, I'm researching, I'm also, you know, you can only have a deep purpose or fulfillment and calling to make your job bigger than it is if you have information. You got to study, you got to learn, you got to research your craft, you got to know about the human mind and body and how it works and what motivates people and, you know, relationships and how do people gain trust from you, and how do you get over people that aren't confident and underestimate their talent? How do you deal with people that overestimate their talent? And how do you diagnose kids' strengths and weaknesses? And my point is, when I look at my job as a basketball coach to try to help, you know, people, because I'm really starting to train millennials now. You know, God, I'm doing a lot of consulting with people between the ages 25 and 45.
Yep.
I don't know how that came about. I guess they look at me, man, I'm still doing it, and I've made a career out of a niche industry, and I don't know. So I've always looked at kids, whether they're 10 or 40, as, all right, I'm going to help you become a living trophy. And what that is that, yeah, they become good at what they do in basketball, but it's more than that. It's, all right, can you win in life? And so to win in life, I think it comes down to something real simple, and that you have to know your calling. You have to know your purpose. You know, Christians call it anointing. You know, God created, whether you believe in God or a higher being,
yes,
you were put on this earth to do something great. Like, you have a gift. And bad people have gifts. You know, the guy that, you know, shot up all those people in Vegas, he had a gift. Right? Everybody has a gift. And so what I'm trying to do is bring that gift out, empower people to use that gift so that, one, they can do great for themselves, two, they can do great for their families, and three, they can do great for their communities. And that's it. I mean, and I use basketball as a platform for that. Math teachers might use a math book for that, but I think if we look at, we're teaching more than just math, we're teaching kids how to be something that, you know, greater than themselves, you know, kings and we're creating kings and queens inside of those kids. Man, I think, you know, people will have a lot more joy. People will have a lot more, efficiency in their life. And by no means will they be perfect. They'll still have problems. We all have issues, but, as far as career exploration, they'll really enjoy getting up every day and making a positive difference in their lives and others. So I guess it comes down to calling, and I know my calling, I know my purpose, and that's what I try to help kids with, is find their purpose through basketball, coaching and training and everything I do.
Very cool, man. And, you know what, just to spin off that, so two things. What is it that you believe your calling is, like, in a sentence? And number two, I think that everybody, including myself, would wonder, what are your strategies and philosophies around somebody finding their purpose and knowing that that's what it is?
You know, well, I believe, you know, my purpose in life is what I'm doing now, you know, is basketball training and coaching and playing education. And I do that through my videos, camps, clinics, you know, workout. To have somebody, you know, to find their calling. I mean, again, it's easier if they had a dad in their life, you know,
a dad,
yeah, a father.
Why a dad? Why not a mom?
Because I think a father, well, a mother helps, but a father's job is to identify the identity of that kid and to give that kid an identity and help that kid with a mom's job is to nurture that. That's, you know, if you study parents.
Oh, I believe in that.
And I didn't really understand that until I have kids. I got three kids, and it's my job to love and to nurture. But my sole purpose is to help my kids understand who they are and what they want to become. And my mom and my dad and my wife's purpose is to help them be safe and be loved and be in touch and balance with their emotions and to nurture them, to take care of them. And that's gone on until the end of, since the beginning of time, man. And so, if they don't have a dad, they need to have a male role model and you know, a mentor, a man that kind of, that's what a mentor is, a man that kind of tours their life and somebody like, you know, I call it an OG, you know, an old guy, you know, in the street, an old gangster, somebody that's been through it, that is smart, that has common sense, that can help. You know, direct them to, you know, to pull out their strengths, to notice their weaknesses, and to point out what they're doing right and wrong, to get them structured, to get them on a daily lifestyle of what they want to do, setting goals and achieving those goals and having action steps. So that'd be my first, is if we really want to, you know, get somebody that's had, you know, success, and then you follow them. You know, success, I always say success leaves footprints.
Yep.
So you must follow them. So, you know, I've had mentors in my life that have helped me, and I still go to them. Cause it gets lonely. I mean, cause once you're a leader, man, it gets lonely. You know, it gets really lonely because everybody's sucking from your well, and you just end up don't having a lot of time unless you make it.
And how do you really deal with that? How do you deal with that loneliness? Because I experienced that. I can tell you that firsthand. I definitely experienced that loneliness big time.
You know, with me, my wife's always a phone call away, FaceTime now. It's unbelievable. But, you know, it gets to my second part of how people can find their calling, and it's God. I mean, you know, you're never lonely in prayer time and praise time and worship time. I mean, you don't have to have church in a building. Church is in you. And, you know, you only understand that if people are spiritual. If somebody's not spiritual, they wouldn't know what I'm talking about. But it's just a supernatural feeling of reading the word, praying, and then kind of going on and getting rejuvenated. But, you know, people can find out their calling having a relationship with God and being spiritual. And Romans 12 talks about all that in the Bible. You know, 12:6 specifically says we're all giving gifts, and it's up to you to find out what God wants you to do with that. by praying and by being in his word. So, as I said, I read The Purpose Driven Life by Rick Warren, and I never turned back. And everybody was telling me, don't do it. 80% of small businesses fail within 6 months. You've never ran a business. You're not a businessman. You're a coach. Coaches don't know how to run a business. And, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have a gym. There was no social media. You know, you don't have any money. Somebody's going to give you a loan. But here I am making well over six figures and enjoying my life. And as you said, you know, making a difference to people that I don't even know I'm making a difference to. You know, the third thing is that they have to figure out, number one, what are they good at? And number two, do they love that? So, you know, it's all about figuring out, you know, how they want to spend the 8 to 10 hours a day with the rest of their life. And then, you know, all right, then how am I going to be the best? They got to research people that have done that, mm-hmm. you know,
model them.
I couldn't do that when I was looking for a career. So I found Dave Hopla. You know, he was the only guy that was doing this as a living. And he was a shooting coach that would go around and just do shooting camps and shooting clinics. And I had a list of about 50 questions that I went and saw Dave and asked him. And then Five Star Camp, you know, was obviously camp that did it all summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I consulted with a guy named Lee Klein and asked him 30 questions. And he actually offered me a job to be their skill guy and kind of start a new trend. And I almost took it, but I didn't. But, you know, so, you know, with that, it's mentor, it's a spiritual connection, and then, you know, research, you know, finding out what you're good at and what, you know, what you enjoy doing, and then, you know, find out somebody that has success at what you do and go out and just grill them with questions, and then, you know, the last thing is short-term goals, you know, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly goals.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want to try to do it over again, you know, from a business perspective, if you don't know anything in your industry, then you need to take a class and you need to learn it. And, for me, it was business. I didn't really know how to run a business. I still kind of lean on, I have Mihai who's running my business now. So
he's a great guy.
I just let those people do it. And we just hired a company in China to run our business in China.
Phenomenal.
I kind of delegate stuff that I don't know how to do.
That's freaking awesome.
But, I can organize myself one of these days. I'm going to write a book on, you know, how to find your calling and how to have make a difference in life. Cause, I mean, for me to do this in basketball, and it's really not an important job. It's training. You know, in retrospect, it's a dessert, quote unquote, to a lot of people. You know, they don't have to have it, but they'll take it. But, you know, I take it, like you said, I take it so seriously that I really believe I can change people's life in that hour, in that day, in that week. And so that's why, you know, I bring so much intensity and focus and excitement because I could change somebody's life, even though the world looks at it as not a very important job.
Yeah, I agree with literally everything that you said, but I don't see it as a not important job. I see it as so significant, and I think that it's my own bias because I've experienced it and I like know what that feels like. But I guess what I'm trying to tell you is that I've gotten out of it those things that have made my life better, not just my basketball career better, because my basketball career went, it went nowhere. And I'm not upset about that. It wasn't my true calling. But it's beautiful to hear you say all this. Everybody I interview is deeply connected on a spiritual level, whether it's God, whether it's some form of higher existence.
Right.
And anybody who denies that, you know, I don't bat an eye at them or tell them that they're wrong or try to harm them. But I just ask myself, you know, I feel like in their heart something's missing. So I feel like that's a huge part. And I'm glad that you hit that. And, you know, just kind of coming to the end here because I want to respect your time. I was going to ask you about risk, and maybe if there's time after, I will, because I would love to hear kind of your thoughts on that. But ultimately, I do have two more questions for you, and one is deep, and then the one we're going to end it on like a bit of a joke and a bit of a funny note. I think you'll like it. And I actually got this question by a gentleman of named Lewis House. He runs a international show, and he's had the best of the best on there. I'm having him on my show hopefully soon. And he asks us phenomenal questions to his guests, and I would love to ask you it because I think it means so much, and I would love to hear your answer. And what it is it's, again, theoretically speaking, if for some reason right now everything that you've ever done, from a basketball camp to a word you'd spoken to a word you'd written to a video you recorded, was lost forever. It was erased. Nobody could retrieve it. Nobody could re-engage it. Nobody could learn from it. And you had an opportunity just this one last time to write on a sheet of paper three truths about life that are totally universal for your grandkids, for your kids, for your kids' kids, and your kids' kids' kids to look at and for the world to see. And that was it. And that was the amalgamation. That was the climax of your entire life's teachings up until this point. What would you want to write on that paper? What would be those three deep truths that just mean more than anything that you think that are just undisputed about life?
Wow, I've never heard that question before. So three truths that I could go take away from my life if everything was lost.
Exactly, you got it.
I would say number one, that God is real and Jesus is His Son and He walked the earth and He's real.
Beautiful.
That's one, that He is the Christ, He is the Savior. I know that for a fact. Number two, being passionate about
yes
what you do, being passionate about your job will bring you so much more joy and peace than money.
Mm.
And number three, no matter what you go through in life, the highs, the lows, the ups and downs, there's no greater resource on earth than your family. And again, for me, it's my wife and three kids, but for other people, you know, everybody defines family differently. You know, family could be a tremendous group of friends. It could be your girlfriend. It could be, you know, your mom and dad, your immediate family, you know. So, but there's no greater resource on this earth than family.
That so. I'm rarely at a loss of for friggin' words, man. That was that touched my heart. All three of those. That was amazing. And I'm glad nobody's asked you that before. I hope that made you call in some parties.
Yeah,
that was cool.
But that's kind of, you know, I think I have a gift that way. Me, I always said that you know, when I do interviews, people always ask me, hey, man, you want me to send you 10 questions beforehand? I'm like, nah. Me, I think that's fake. It's wrong.
I always love
to speak from the heart, to be, you know, I think one of my compliments people give me is that, you know, they don't always agree with me, but they love the fact that that I'm genuine and I speak from the heart and I'm super authentic.
Yeah.
And so even though I could be wrong at times, you know, I'm never fake or, you know, I'm never trying to put on a show. I mean, I really speak from the heart and want people to know what I'm thinking and feeling. So to that, yeah, that kind of surprised me. I didn't know I'd be asked that. And that's kind of what was in my heart. If I go back and listen to this next week, I'm sure I'll always keep those same answers. But I mean, I think about that a lot, man. Like, you don't know, but when you start running your own business or you have your own life, I mean, life is hard, man. It's like Rocky Balboa said, it'll eat you up and spit you out, and it ain't all sunshines and rainbows, man. It's hard. And so if you have passion, family, and for me, it must, my spiritual walk is with the Lord. I mean, it's everything else doesn't mean nothing, man. So, I mean, it means something, and you gotta pay your taxes, and you gotta provide. But it's like, you know, it's like, man, so many people are bitter and depressed, and like, shit, man, you know, if you have family, God, and a passion, what else would you need?
And it just, like, I got to ask you this, man, before I ask that funny question, because after I ask that funny question, this thing's going to go this thing's going to go sideways, because it's just going to, it's going to probably just, like, change your mind about, or, like, change your focus is what I mean. But, man, where does this certainty come from? Because I think one thing that I would love to know about you, even more important than that risk question, was where does the certainty come from in yourself, this confidence in your way of life and your way of beliefs and being? Because I think, like, even that, I must say, it's a bit of a personal question, something I've always struggled with, you know what I mean? Sharing my truths and standing by them in times of hardship and controversy. You know, Martin Luther King had a great quote. He said, true test of a character of a man is not where he stands in times of pleasure. It's where he stands in times of challenge and controversy. And I'm curious, I'm sure that you've had a ton of people just, like, take a bat and swing at your beliefs, and I'm sure that you've had them come from people who you highly respect and would never expect to have ever encountered that kind of opposition from them. And how have you managed to really get over that? How have you managed to really overcome that?
Yeah, my confidence just comes from a deep relationship with the Lord. And, I mean, I'm 45, and I've had some, you know, what I call life in me. So, if you'd have seen me at 10, 11, 17, I mean, I had confidence, but not the bad guy.
Hello? Hey, Gann, are you there?
Yeah.
I think we got cut off for a second. You were saying you were 10, 11, 14, you had confidence, but...
Yeah, I had confidence, but, you know, I was... figuring myself out. You know, you get confidence by going through battles. You know, you get confidence by having scars. You know, anybody that has a great victory has to go through great pain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been through a lot of pain in my life. I got bullied tremendously just for being white, growing up in an all-black school, all-black neighborhood, trying to play the quote-unquote black sport. I mean, I got the reverse race, you know, reverse discrimination against me, man, because, you know, I was the only white dude in the gym, and they didn't want, you know, they just bullied me.
And I remember you used to play with, like, AI and when I used to play with Allen, and they wouldn't let you play, but they kept on seeing you show up, that eventually, like, they would let you get in on second and third runs. Is that right?
Yeah, well, when Allen started showing up, you know, he was 3 years younger than me, so when he started showing up, I was one of the guys, like, I was one of the best ones in the gym.
Oh,
so
okay, word.
This was before Allen. This was, you know, I started, you know, going to the boys club at 11, and then I met Allen when I was 16, so Allen was 13, so Allen, but even then, you know, I mean, you get stuff talked to you about 13, 14. Now, who's this white? Why is he in the gym, you know? And eventually, you know, I started getting respect. And then college, you know, I would get beat up and hazed and went to the hospital a couple nights because I'm trying to lead the team and taking their reefer and flushing it down the toilet and guys jumping me. And with a big kid on the team that wasn't allowed to eat pizza, and he was eating pizza, and I grabbed the pizza and said, yo, now we need you to be in shape. Now we got Temple tomorrow. We don't need you eating pizza and smoking reefer the night before the game. And, you know, he slugged me and body slammed. He was 6'6", 270. And, you know, I just, you know, so, you know, and then in the locker, you know.
You got some,
the locker room.
Man, you got some balls.
Yeah, no, I got balls, but that don't mean I always felt good. You know, in the locker room, I would speak up, and they'd tell me to shut up, and you don't know what you're talking about. And, you know, so I've been through a lot of pain from peers, and then, you know, my brother, and everybody's had a hard life, but for me, the toughest thing I've had to deal with is my brother got killed in a car accident when I was 23. He was 21, and that shook the family up a little bit. And I've had some family members go through some addiction and some dissension, and, you know, I went through a divorce first 8 years of my business, and just, you know, didn't spend enough time with my wife, and it was into my business, and my first marriage, you know, went down, and, you know, so my fault, and, you know, that hurt a lot. That hurt. Never ever wanted to hurt a family like that. But so, I mean, I, you know, my confidence comes from my pain because I learned from it. I got stronger from it. You know, perseverance. The Bible talks about each character. So, and I'm still learning. You know, I've lost a lot of deals and a lot of money just because I've been taken advantage of and just made some stupid decisions with personnel. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but again, I got my passion, I got my family, I got my health, and I got my relationships. So
that's awesome.
You know, there's a sign on top of our door that we hit every day. We go out the door. It says, "Wake up, be amazing, go back to bed."
I love that, man. I love that. Oh, I love that. I love hearing little things like that. And you know what? I just want to acknowledge you for a second, man. I think that when I initially reached out, I told you that this call was going to be 10.
No, sir, man. I think I dropped you.
No. No worries at all, man. I think we got cut. But I think it happened for a reason. And what I was saying is I just want to acknowledge you for a second real quick. I know that when I reached out, I said this call is going to be 10 to 15, and it's been about 30 now. And you just poured into me, man, and poured into the conversation and subsequently poured into anybody listening to this. And it just goes back to my thing that I said at the beginning, man. You're just such a giver, and I appreciate you. But as an effort to respect your time, because I know that that's the most important thing, truly and really. I want to ask you this last funny question, and then I'm going to tell you some stuff that I think may be able to help you out, connect you with a few people I was telling Miha about, and then I'll let you
okay.
go. Long story short, here's a funny question. It's totally theoretical, and I know 110% life is not about comparing yourself, it's about contributing yourself, but just theoretically speaking,
yeah.
for fun, if you were in an audience and the audience was all blacked out, the lights were off, and the only lights that were on the stage. And on the stage, there was Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, and Michael Jordan in his prime. And they were speaking and having this talk, and then all of a sudden, for some random reason, they stop talking all at once, like something's planned or something's going on, and then a spotlight appears in the audience. And the spotlight's searching, and it's searching, and it's searching, and then boom, the spotlight lands on you. And then they go, "Excuse me, you, sir, come up to the stage, come up to the stage, come up to the stage." And then they don't know who you are, but you sure as hell know who they are. And they're like, "What's your name?" You're like, "Anna Baker." And you guys talk for a little bit. And they go, "Look, we are so confident in our lives and our income and our careers that we personally believe that we could beat anybody at anything. It doesn't matter what it is. And here's what I'm willing to do. I'm willing to bet you," and this is LeBron James, Michael Jordan in his prime, Kobe Bryant. They're saying, "I'm willing to bet you $10 million that you can't beat us at a thing. It doesn't matter what it is. And if you win, you get the $10 million. But if we win, you don't have to pay us anything. We just get the satisfaction knowing that we're the best on earth." And then they give you the mic and they say, "What game do you want to play?" What would you challenge them to do?
Well, my ego would say horse if I went first, because I know none of them can shoot with their left hand from three. And honestly, I can't. That. So it'd be, and my ego would say horse, because if I could beat them, forget the money, if I could just, you know, at dinner talks and cocktail parties, I could say, "Yeah, I'd be the best of the best in horse." Anyway, how'd you do that? I shot with my left hand. I didn't miss much. But I would say swimming, because there's no way in hell they'd beat me in swimming. Where if we did like an individual medley or freestyle 100 yards,
I love it.
No
I
way.
Love it. I love it. Those are wicked answers, man.
Well, Nick, man, I appreciate you showing into me, man. That means a lot, and I would take that consideration. And, you know. I'm humbled that as a young kid that you would take what I said at heart, and you know, you never know how those weeks are going to go and who's going to go home and actually, you know, contemplate on what they heard that day. So obviously you have, and looks like you're on your way up. So kudos to you, man, and keep fighting.
Cool, man. I appreciate you, man. And thank you once again for the time and the love and everything you gave on this call, man. I'm looking forward to throwing this together. And I'll email Miha a link when it's all said and done if you ever want a conversation to share with others or to listen to when times are hard.
Yeah.
That being said, man, I really appreciate you again and much love. Thank you for the time. And I'll get all those connections this afternoon so that you'll see something come through your email then. And if you need anything from me, this is my number. You could always call me or hit me up. Just let me know.
Hey, thanks, Nick. Appreciate it, man.
Best wishes again.